What the FUD is going on right now?
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 69. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
Feeling a little tired, man. There's no caffeine on this floor. I can't find, they're out of coffee, there's no sodas, like, they're M&Ms. I mean, the world hasn't ended. We still have M&Ms, but.
Yeah, we are still in Palo Alto doing some training here and also doing some podcasts with some of the local employees and also some other VMware employees around the world. But yeah, you're right. This is a great office. There's so many cool things. Free M&Ms. How can you beat that? But yeah, no coffee on this floor. So John's in pain.
I'll be curled up in the corner. And
well, John, this is an exciting one for me, especially because today we're bringing on a dear friend of mine from my previous employer, NetApp, a great guy who's been in the storage industry for many, many years. And he actually did the podcast with me at NetApp. And now he's joined our team on the vSAN team. And he's focusing on VMware Cloud on AWS. Mr. Glenn Sizemore. Glenn, welcome to the podcast. Welcome back to this podcast world that we do.
Yeah, man. I've been on here before. It was a while back.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. But you were a NetApp guy back then.
I was. A lot has changed.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have recorded 63 episodes.
Yeah, we've done quite a few. That's right.
But it's okay because we're here now, and today we're going to announce vSAN 6.9 on episode 69, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do?
Ooh.
That is not a true statement. I don't want to get in trouble with legal. So, yes, we are not giving any future numbers.
The SEC is back to work. Just when the shutdown's over, we can't make those jokes anymore.
Glenn. Yeah. So Glenn, you recently wrote a blog post, one of your first ones as a VMware employee, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, man.
You started to address some of the, you looked at vSAN from the perspective of a storage admin, which I think has an interesting viewpoint. It's very different from someone who might be new to storage or might only know storage at a high level. I think storage administrators in general, because they know the depths of, you know, the traditional storage ways that we all have come to know over the years, looking at it from the eyes of a storage administrator, I think that's a really interesting perspective. And so your blog post was great. We posted it a couple of weeks ago and it just blew up. I think you got like 800 hits. And so it's just really, it's obviously an interesting topic. And so I thought we'd bring you on and talk a little bit about that. So
yeah, I like to think that it's knowledge of all the ways that this stuff can go bad.
Yeah.
Right. It's all the scars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the history that honestly makes a lot of graybeards the way that they are. It's why they're stalwarts. It's why they're ultra conservative.
Yeah.
You know, the saying that I've always liked is, you know, any event in storage is a resume generating event.
Yeah, that's true.
It just always is. You know, when something goes wrong in the persistence tier, normally somebody gets fired. It's an unfortunate truth, but it's the whole game. Mm-hmm. Like when you lose that tier, you've lost everything. It doesn't matter if your network's still up.
Data is the one thing that's sacred in the data center. Like, the network's down, the network's up, well, whatever. But you
exactly.
Know.
Yeah. So when I started, honestly, this started as you and I just shooting stuff, going out to lunch and you know, sharing stories and hearing about some of the new features in vSAN. Started reading up and after VMworld this past year, just really kind of dove in and got myself caught up with what was shipping in 6.6 and then later with 6.6.1, and just kind of had this realization that, you know, I looked at vSAN when it was first delivered, vSAN 1.0, when there were lots of jokes around the industry.
Sure.
Some of them deserve it, some of them not. And then I hadn't looked at it, you know, and for the past 3.5 years and 6-some-odd releases, there's a huge team here of world-class engineers that have just never stopped.
Yep.
They just keep working through the problem. And I personally feel that they've gotten to a point where vSAN is an enterprise-ready storage platform, particularly when we're talking about virtual machine storage for vSphere. It very well may be the premier storage platform.
Yeah.
Right? So it was an effort to try to sit down and go, okay, look, I know the argument. I know how this thing is talked about behind closed doors. So let's just try to have an adult conversation about it and address these points and educate the masses out there how it's solved. Maybe you agree with it, maybe you don't, but let's make a data-driven decision, not just, you know, talk trash and go with our gut.
But I like saying snarky things on Twitter. That's what graybeards do. Cynicism.
Snark is an appropriate part of the conversation, but must be kept to no more than 20%.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, you did just come from NetApp. And I will say that my experience with NetApp in the past, which has always been, I've always been very happy about that, is that NetApp's never really been a company that pushes out a lot of FUD, which has always been good. Focus on what you do well. Yeah. I hate when companies start spinning FUD all over the place. I don't think that's a good way to do business.
Yeah. Clearly, when you and I were on the VTME teams and we were working together back there, that was absolutely the modus operandi. Anyone who tried to come in and lead the other way was very quickly put in their place, right?
Well, talking about your competitors more than your own product just doesn't, you know, it's kind of pointless.
Well, yeah. And from my personal opinion, it's pointless for two very, very specific reasons. One, you're just drawing attention to someone other than yourself, which is kind of silly.
Yep.
Two, it's a really risky position because if you're wrong about anything, then you've just discredited your entire argument. How does the customer know that they can believe anything that you said?
Well, that's a good point.
And actually, to a certain degree, like if you think about the hardware array-based world back when, you know, ASICs roamed the earth and were the normal, saying, well, they can't do this because of this, that fact probably might not change for 3 to 5 years until a new generation came out. And the software-defined world saying, oh, we're the only ones who could do this or they can't do that, is a very dangerous thing when, I mean, we've got two major releases, two minor releases, and an express patch or two that throws out a bonus feature. So it's really hard to competitively pin down a software-defined product.
Yeah. That's why I personally am one of the, these days, I definitely ascribe to the philosophy that you should just talk about what makes your platform great.
Agreed.
Right? And if the customers are listening to you and the things that your platform excels at are the types of things that they need solved, you'll get all their money. It's just how it works.
Note two, our evil plan, get all of your money.
All of the money. Yeah. That is the public plan.
While solving problems, though. I mean, that goes against consulting, where I joke that, you know, there was a lot of money to be made not solving the problem and keeping it going.
Job security. Absolutely. Well, Glenn, you wrote this blog post and addressing some of the FUD that's been out there over the years. And so I really wanted to walk through a couple of these and get your point. Maybe you can expound on some of these. The first one is HCI is fine for dev and test data, but it's not reliable enough for production data.
Yeah. This is. I honestly think this comes from the early days of just it being a new platform. The simple fact of the matter is vSAN has been in the market now for 3.5 years, which may not sound like a very long time, but we've now made it through 6 releases. John, how many customers we got now?
Over 10,000.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's we're not talking about a small platform. We have reached a point in the scale of the deployment where we can definitively start to say, no, that's not a problem. We have production workloads that are successfully being ran all over the place.
Yeah.
Right. So then you really have to start to pick that apart and go, well, why would somebody say that, right? Because there's got to be a reason behind it. And 9 times out of 10, this comes down to, in my experience, this is just fear. Ah. This is the same thing that you know, the old joke, you don't get fired for buying IBM. You'll never get fired for buying Cisco. There's a million of these throughout the years. VMware is absolutely on that list these days, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the fear of, well, I don't want to invest in an unsure platform. We've got this thing that we've always used. It's never had any issues. Maybe it doesn't. It may not be perfect. And we've got our list of gripes, but they're known gripes, right? So I took the approach of saying, look, okay, what do you need for production workloads? Well, there are two things that are completely separate, and we'll get into, I think, in this podcast why they're separate, that are super, super critical to, air quotes, business critical applications, production workloads in the modern world.
Two things. Okay.
Two things. Availability, tunable availability, not blanket availability. We know how to build systems that are spaceships, that have fully redundant backplanes and mirror everything everywhere. The problem is those systems are too expensive for almost everybody on the planet,
sure.
Right? So we need the ability to right size availability to the needs of the individual application. Otherwise, customers just can't afford to make anything available, right? The second thing that we need is durability, unquestioning. We cannot lose data. And that second point is really the panacea of the storage market. Like, you cannot lose data. It is not acceptable. It is the only thing that will actually get you thrown out of an account. Because that's their livelihood. You just lost their livelihood. Why would they trust you? So when I sat down and took a look at vSAN, I was like, okay, well, how does vSAN handle this problem, right? I know how ONTAP does it. I know how SolidFire does it. I know how Centricity does it. I know how Clarion did it. How does vSAN do this? And the very first thing that I stumbled into, which made my eyes go wide, is this isn't a block device and this isn't a distributed file system. This is a damn object store.
Aha.
Sneaky plan number four has been unlocked.
Object stores are completely different animals that honestly have to be treated as such because they enable scalability and tunability at a per object level, right? You can control it at that per object granularity. The analogy that I inherited from the brilliant Duncan Moore over at NetApp,
yep,
for object store that I always loved was, you know, traditional storage or file system storage is like a parking garage, right? The parking garage where we left our car this morning when we came here on campus.
Yep.
We have to remember where that car is. We have to know how to get back to it. We have to know where the spot is. We have to know exactly where the spot is. We have to know where our keys are to get into it. We have to have all of our stuff with us, okay?
And hopefully no one hit it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And hopefully no one hit it. An object store is valet service. An object store is you walk up to the front of the building, you get out of your car, and you walk inside, okay? And on the way, you tell the valet, oh, by the way, I may need to be in San Francisco next week, so make sure a copy of this car is out there, and have my backpack in the back seat just in case I may need an extra set of clothes, okay? And then you just find yourself in San Francisco 3 days later, and you walk outside, you walk up to the valet and say, sir, can I have my car now? Thanks.
That's a perfect analogy. I love it.
You don't have to think about how it got there. You don't have to pay any attention to how it was safe and how two of them appeared. Like, none of this is your problem.
Yep.
Your problem is you have a ticket that says that there is a car ready for you. And that is the fundamental power of an object store. And the fact that vSAN is based upon one is a huge deal that cannot be understated. It is the enabling feature for the availability engine.
See, I just asked for them to wash my car. Like, I need to start being more demanding at the valet, clearly.
Yeah.
Well, segueing on to huge scale, HCI is fine as long as you don't need to scale. This will sometimes be more directly stated as vSAN is fine, but doesn't scale.
Yeah. So this one is a pet peeve of mine. I cannot stand it happens in every single engineering discussion. You can't get away from it. Whenever you're discussing a problem, somebody somewhere in the room will just feel like a brilliant person for raising their hand and saying, yes, but will it scale? Which is the wrong question and has always been the wrong question. The right question is, does it scale to the scale that we need for this problem?
Right.
Well, it reminds me of an expression. Someone was talking about the worst type of question you can ever get while you're presenting at a conference. And it's the question that's not a question. You get a resume and then they're just being a dick. And it's where the guy goes, hey, at Netflix, we don't do that. Or that doesn't work for us at Google, which generally means that the person who's asking the question must be on their compression algorithms because he has somehow compressed a non-question, a resume, and being a dick all into one question.
That is brilliant.
But yeah, it's, you know what? Not everyone is Netflix and needs to have, you know, every movie ever made geolocated in every place.
So yeah.
Saying this storage system, it doesn't scale. It's for what, you know? Yeah.
So let's actually let's just solve this real quick because this is one of those things that honestly, I can't believe anybody would still utter other than they're just ignorant. They haven't bothered to read up on the current capabilities of the platform. It's the only reason you would make this claim. So for every single vSphere host that you add into a vSAN cluster, you are adding the ability to manage 9,000 component objects, okay? Those objects can be VMDK slices or VM homes, VM swaps, whatever they need to be, right? An individual VMDK can be up to 255 gigs. So if we extrapolate this all the way up and say, let's assume that we're going to put 64 nodes in a cluster and each node is going to have 9,000 component objects, that means that we get roughly a little over 500,000 component object totals. And assuming that all of those component objects were consumed in support of VMDK storage, we have about 140 petabytes of addressable capacity for 6,000 virtual machines.
Yeah.
In a single vSphere cluster. How much scale do you need in a single vSphere cluster?
That's the point. In a single vSAN cluster.
Yeah, it's like vCenter can manage a lot of clusters too.
Yeah.
And then you can start federating vCenters and.
Yeah. 2,000 hosts in a single vCenter federated link mode. With my product, VMware Cloud on AWS, you can have 300 of them tomorrow. All you have to do is log in, create an account, and say go.
Yep.
I've only ever talked to one person who seriously started, like, I made me start thinking about the object components. And this was a guy who, he was trying to push something like 8,000 VMs or, you know, per cluster, 10,000 or something.
Yeah.
And we started going through the math. I was like, wait, who do you work for? What do you do? He's like, my name is Bob. I can't tell you who I work for. And he had some, you know, serious looking Tam following around who also wouldn't answer my question. So I'm like, all right, I don't care what you spooks do in the world. Like, you know, but the normal people don't have this concern. And
exactly.
And that's something we can always raise if we need to.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I'm a little sensitive to this stuff because I've been fighting this particular argument for the past 6-7 years now. ONTAP is a very similar type of platform. When they released their cluster products, you know, it scaled to 24 nodes. That was 5-6 years ago. There were people who did the math on the back of a napkin and said, oh, look at this limited platform. This will never work. 5-6 years later, they haven't needed to increase it.
Yeah. So it's been really interesting working, because this is my first time working with a software company.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone realizes, we see those maximums. That means someone actually had to do some type of testing and extrapolation.
Yeah.
There is way more cost associated in doing. And then every patch that comes out after that, since 64 is the maximum, we have to regression
test. We have to test this
every
against,
new
64.
Patch against 64. Yeah. And we have to do all these simultaneous tests. There are immense costs in scaling QE, much more than the developers. Developers write the code once and they move on.
Yeah.
But... and you'll actually see there are products and cases and things where they're like, this use case outside of vSAN, they'll be like, we won't go, you know, I think Horizon for VDI, I think they only support up to 32. But here's the thing. If you can have 400 users on a host and 32 hosts, how many users do you want calling your help desk if you have a cluster go down?
Exactly.
And so it starts to become like, wait a minute, GSS doesn't want this liability of, you got to have the engineering and support sign off on these scale limits. And if you truly are the magical snowflake who has identified a business use case for raising scale in a software product, go talk to the product marketing people or the product management people, because they in engineering, they're always looking for someone who will financially justify adding all that Q and that overhead. But people don't just say, we're going to scale this to exabytes. Or my favorite is you'll occasionally see startups will do this. They'll say, oh, we have unlimited scale. We have unlimited scale on write cache or something.
Yes.
And I'm like, that just means you've never tested.
Yeah, that's exactly. Anytime someone starts giving you astronomical scale limits, the question to ask is, yes, that's fantastic. What did you test in your own labs?
And, you know, I have friends across the storage industry, and there's one case where one large company ate another storage company, which, believe it or not, happens on occasion. And you notice the spec sheet, these certain things that said unlimited started actually having real limits. And certain cluster maximums started going down. And it's basically some grown-ups are like, all right.
Yeah, we can't get away with this.
We need to actually test this. We can't just blindly claim things. And what's scary is, as important as that persistence layer is, there sometimes are cases where on these pedantic arguments of scale, the people who are claiming otherwise are not being grown-ups. They're not queuing. They're not testing that. So actually, if someone has a limit that sounds reasonable, but, you know, it's like, all right, it'd be hard to make a business case beyond that. That means you actually have, you know, engineers and product management and support people who are saying, all right, let's actually, let's talk to customers first before we make wild claims.
Yeah. From my perspective, though, you know, honestly, vSAN changes this answer a little bit, but with traditional storage, I would always tell customers, like, 16 node clusters. What? Don't go bigger than that. Why? What is your benefit?
Tell
Why
me the
do
reason.
You need more?
Back when we had, you know, we had 2-core processors and we could only, and you know, getting more than 64 gigs of RAM in a host was a problem.
Yeah,
I got it. I got wanting to scale big. But now
it's,
you know, and Duncan's written some great blogs about this, about cluster size. I wrote one about vSAN cluster size. This is something that when people start wanting to compare maximums on spec sheets, you've really gotten into a weird situation of, that means they don't want to talk about management. They don't want to talk about life cycle. They don't want to talk about that. It's often a deflection.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Let's stay on that for just half a second though, because I didn't add this in, this wasn't in the post, but I think that's a really good point, because when you find yourself exploring these types of numbers and figures, honestly, what you're trying to do is figure out which one's best, right?
Or you're trying to work backwards to justify your bias.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Look, if that's what you're doing, which I've done in the past, I was an admin once. Yeah, sure. I knew what I wanted and I wrote the RFP to get it. And I didn't get it.
That's because you're in the government.
Yeah, that is true. But honestly, I really think that ease of use and administratability, like that is becoming the driving factor.
And that's hard to put on a spec sheet of, you know,
yeah.
How do you put a number on, this is actually really easy to set up, or it's really easy to handle this, you know, this change.
Well, John, what you do is you go to VMware Cloud on Amazon Web Services and you try it. And then once you figure out you love it, you keep it forever.
Yeah. No, so storage purchasing, you've got completely wrong. It should take a year and a half of indecision and a barking carnival of people coming in and out. In fact, you should spend more if you calculate the total salary time of all the people and all the meetings and all and the real estate of all the conference rooms that had to be hijacked to discuss this RFP and the selection process. So you can make this one big decision. No, Glenn, this is a terrible idea. Just doing a quick trial, spending up four, you know, hosts and VMware Cloud on AWS, seeing how easy it is. That defies all logic.
I remember speaking to a product manager, and I won't say what company it was, but there was a company that I spoke to a product manager, and I was looking at some features. I think it was at VMworld, and they were another company, and we started talking about feature comparison.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I see that you guys have this feature, and I won't say what it is, but does anybody use that feature? And
oh, please no. Please don't turn that on, you know?
And he was like, well, no. And I was like, well, why do you guys, you know, why is it on your, and he's like, well, because these other guys have it. So we have to be able to say that we have that, you know, because it's a comparison. People start going down the lines and crossing up. Do they both have A? Do they both have B?
That starts getting scary on some cases where people start shipping features so they can have that checkbox. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, even if that's not, like, let's pretend that that doesn't occur because it's really hard to quantify. Even though we both know it does in different instances. Yeah, I agree. But I guess my point is, and we'll get to this too, but whether we're talking about capacity or scalability from number of VMs or any of that stuff, like honestly, those types of questions, it's a binary decision, right? Yes or no. Is it big enough? Yes or no. It doesn't matter if it's just, well, it's big enough, but only by 1,000 VMs. And this other one's big enough by like 10,000, a corner of their product spreadsheet.
But I have 500. So
yeah, you're yeah. borrowing trouble. You're yeah. worrying about a limitation and a constraint that you may never hit. You know this. One of my favorite sayings in life, Yagni, you ain't going to need it, right? Yeah. Don't solve a problem until it's actually a problem. So the scalability stuff, I think, is just a quick fact check to make sure that the platform is sound. And you're not making a dumb decision. And the rest of your time really should be spent on those day one operations because that's where you're going to be living with the thing
yeah.
the whole time you have it.
Yeah, that's very right.
Yeah, okay, this takes 15 minutes to deploy. This takes 30 minutes. I'm going to run it for how many thousand hours?
Don't get me started on people talking about how fast their products are to set up. Like that's a meaningful metric for anyone other than VARs that set up storage systems all day, every day.
That's so true. All right, Glenn, what about performance?
So, yeah, performance is a tricky one. I kind of punted in the post because that I'm going to have to revisit this. This is, I plan on addressing this specifically from the realm of VMware Cloud on AWS and helping just kind of establish what we're capable of on that platform. But needless to say, we've done the hero benchmarks, right? Mm-hmm. We've done it. We've got real world workloads in process. And honestly, just take a look at the architecture and see how it works. It's not confusing why this product performs.
That's not a lot of NVMe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's actually, I was honestly a little bit, I think in hindsight, I was a little bit perturbed with vSAN when it first shipped because it was just like, the gall. What do you mean you just put two different devices in there and you write to one of them and then destage when you feel like it? No, we have all these complex algorithms and NVDIMMs and checkpoint cycles.
I did publish a caching paper, but it was very dense and I don't think anyone ever read it. So
It's just like traditional storage arrays, they go through all these backflips to be able to get everything to a consistency state every 10 seconds.
Right? Storage is hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. And then for vSAN just came in and took a different approach with it. And I honestly think after 3 years of talking to customers who deployed it, who like, yeah, whatever, I could point at the corner and show you where my product scaled better or could hit a higher hero number. I could do that all day, every day. But at the end of the day, the customer was happy.
Yep.
And it was good enough. It solved their problem.
I like it. All right. Object count. I know we talked about space earlier and capacity, but
yeah.
Object count's slightly different.
Yeah. Object count is slightly different. I threw it in there earlier because I forgot that I answered it separately. but it does come down to fundamentally, there are 9,000 objects as you add a node, right? Yep. So if we're starting with a two node stretch cluster with a witness, real small, 18,000 objects, yep, right? Still a pretty big number. And again, if it needs to get higher, that's a software qual.
Yeah, but we also need to, we want to know what the hell you're doing with that on two hosts. Like, it's,
absolutely, absolutely.
We really want to. You can't just say your name's Bob and, like, you know, try to pretend you won't tell us who you work for. I want to know what you're doing.
Yeah, but fundamentally, I just believe that there's enough objects in the pool to support what we're doing, right? And again, this is another one of those scenarios where I have a different perspective, but. You know, I spent forever and a day with ONTAP. I know that platform inside and out. And let me tell you, it has limits left, right, and center. None of them matter.
Yeah.
Right? They're just not real problems for customers. The customers are aware of where those limits are, and they don't ever run into them, and it's fine. Right?
But I would have a pedantic argument about iNode counts. So, because someone gave me a PDF that showed how they had a bigger number.
All right. Well, then let's argue space efficiency then.
All right. So this one... This one's actually interesting because vSAN has done something that I'm not aware of anyone else doing, although there's so many startups out there that I'm sure someone's actually done it and I just have a blind spot.
Okay.
Don't say no one's done it because then the VC will go fund someone to do it.
So. Well, this is true. This is true. everyone's done this, but vSAN got it right somehow.
There you go.
With the first iteration of vSAN with 1.0, one of the things that made a lot of traditional storage people just kind of throw their hands up and go, yeah, this is a cool platform, but no one's ever going to be able to afford it, was the RAID 1 mirroring-based failure toleration method.
Yeah.
Right? With 6.2 and the introduction of erasure coding, that changes everything. Because what we've done now with modern versions of vSAN is we've enabled RAID-like efficiency levels using RAIN deployment methodologies. RAIN, for those of you who aren't familiar, is an array of independent nodes. It's the same concept as RAID, only you're taking individual node servers and grouping them together and treating them as singular failure domains.
You're making it rain.
Yeah, so that's everything from my perspective. Because what that means is now we're starting with a shared nothing composable HCI platform that can get 50% raw efficiency off the disk, which may not sound like much, but that's only a handful of percentage points behind a dedicated storage operating system.
Yeah, that's right? True.
And then when you add on to the fact that 6.2 also added support for compression and deduplication,
yeah,
right? And, you know, whatever. I'm sure that there is somebody who can get more dedupe. And there's someone else who's got some compression.
Artisanal, handcrafted, very well slammed.
Yeah,
block.
There's someone with a great compression algorithm that's going to cram it in a little bit more. But it just, after fighting over those two particular things for the better part of 5 years now, dedupe and compression, the way that I like to summarize this is, look, your mileage may vary, but not by much from vendor to vendor.
Yeah.
And if you have a workload that sees a benefit from deduplication, vSAN will give you that benefit. If you have a workload that gives you a benefit from compression, you will see that benefit in a vSAN deployment. And what's cool about vSAN is it's doing it for almost no performance impact because of the way that it's staged in the destage cycle, because of the fact that it's not trying to do this stuff in line, racing with the workload as fast as it can, because it's just kind of taking this other approach to say, look, our cache tier is just that. It's cache. It's all short term. We don't really care. Those are high write, high performing devices.
Wasting CPU hashing that and compressing that is
exactly
a waste of time.
Yeah. So just throwing it in there. And then if the data survives long enough to be destaged, then we'll take the cycles when we have the time, because that's the other thing you can do when you make it an asynchronous process. You can pay attention to what else is going on in the system and whether or not you actually have the cycles to bother trying to do that destage at that point in time.
Well, CPU, like electricity, is a just-in-time commodity. And so, yeah, it's burning it when it's cheap and avoiding burning it when it's expensive, so to speak, when you've got a supply-demand curve.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the rough numbers that I've seen and heard SEs around here use are somewhere between, you know, 1.2 and 1.7, maybe even 2x when we enabled the compression and deduplication features on an existing workload.
Yeah.
So, you know, take that for what it's worth. As I said, like your workload varies, but look, if you have a storage platform today that supports deduplication and or compression and you get great rates, you'll see those savings in vSAN.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind is some people, they blur in their UIs. So they'll include thin provisioning. They'll include every snapshot as a full clone. So when that number starts getting unnaturally high, it's probably because you have things that aren't deduplication and compression that are being put into that.
That's a good point.
You can do linked clones on vSAN, but we don't suddenly, you're not going to get to 50x dedupe because you were doing linked clones.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe we need a weasel math generator that'll spit out like a VROP dashboard. You're getting 400% on this VDI pool.
Well, again, though, at the end of the day, honestly, like, here's my honest takeaway. When we get to the end of the conversation, hey, Mr. Customer, can you afford to get in this car? Like, that's really what this all comes down to, right? Do we have enough capacity? Are we getting enough efficiencies, enough performance so that we can enable that existing storage administration team to either focus more on the data management, which is something that I haven't gotten into in the post and we'll talk about in the future.
Yeah.
Which is why I think this is so important, right? Like, good enough is good enough.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of stuff that we're not doing in this industry. There's a whole bunch of jobs and tasks that are really important that people should be paying attention to, and they're not because they're worrying about double parity configuration.
But instead it's, you know what, let's actually clean up our log directories and not take, you know, have 10 years of logs backing up, or let's actually figure out, our users are generating 14 copies of data across 6 data centers. Why? Like, start taking back control.
Look, we used to delete things in IT. I used to write batch scripts that would go through and clean out file servers to delete stuff. Like, we don't delete anything.
See, I used a file server resource manager, and it would copy it to another place. Then if someone yelled, it took 30 days before it rolled out there. But even then, you're right. Nowadays, users gone wild. You know, why I'm becoming a storage graybeard. Users gone wild. These kids are copying the data everywhere, and no one's stopping them. I mean,
yeah,
it's cheaper to keep her. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but between the erasure coding implementation, deduplicate compression, and the fact that, again, this is a software based platform, like, just look at the existing development roadmap. V1 shipped, again, a little over 3.5 years ago, and 3.5 years later, we're 6 releases in.
Yeah.
And we've marched all the way through the problem space to get to the part where we're now fighting over those end efficiencies.
Well said, well said. Well, that was a great post, and I'll definitely leave it on the show notes of the page, as well as the ones that you mentioned, John. But yeah, I was so glad that you wrote that, because I've known you for years, and I know you to be a very authoritative resource of mine on storage. And so looking at vSAN from a storage administrator's perspective, I think is a really, really interesting conversation. So I'm glad you came to join us on this, but I know your day job is VMware Cloud on AWS.
And yeah,
so,
buddy.
So we'll have to have you on a future episode to dig a little deeper on that. But what are you going to be doing over there?
So I am the technical marketing architect for storage. So anything storage related for the VMware Cloud on AWS service, fundamentally, I own tech marketing for that.
Nice.
So pretty wide umbrella right now. That's basically just vSAN hard stop. But you know storage, man.
Oh, yeah. And that just reminded me, for those of you that don't know, in the beginning of our music, our intro music, there is a young gentleman that says,
"Oh yeah,
that's Glenn Sizemore." And so, Glenn, thank you for that soundbite for our intro music, buddy.
My pleasure.
And we will have you on soon, my friend. Later.
Bye for now.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A huge thanks to my good friend, Mr. Glenn Sizemore. We'll be back next week. But until then, bye for now.
Profoundly dumbfounded.
Oh, yeah.
What the FUD is going on right now?
See?
Enough of this jibber jabber.